The most innovative companies are going further with T-Mobile for Business. Together with Delta, we're putting 5G into the hands of ground staff so they can better assist on-the-go travelers with real-time information. From the Delta Sky Club to the Jet Bridge, this is elevating customer experience. This is Delta with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
Welcome to the Julia and Gino podcast, where business meets family. We explore what the entrepreneurial life looks like from a family perspective. We are your hosts, Julia and Gino Barbaro. Hey everyone, this is Julia Barbaro, host of the Julia and Gino podcast. I am here with the co-founder of Jake and Gino, my husband and co-host, Gino Barbaro.
Hi, Julia.
Hey.
Well,
I just want to say real quick, this is my favorite topic. This is why I started the podcast with you, because we're going to be talking about family, food, and faith.
The three F's.
That's it.
So where do we begin with today's event? Father Leo Padalin Hug is on today. He's a best-selling author, award-winning breakdancer, professional chef, and even winning against Chef Bobby Flay. I love that. And last but not least, he's a priest, right? And I love the funny quote, everybody. Please just try it. If you die, he can do your funeral. So what you got to lose? There's nothing to lose there. So without further ado, Father Leo, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Julia and Gino. It's a pleasure to be on with you. And I know that for your listeners, you said it's like, and I can't remember how you phrased it, but probably the most important thing is that I am a priest. And the strange part is that I'm a breakdancer, martial artist, and a chef, now food trucker. And I host a TV show as well. I kind of don't know what my purpose in life is. I'm just trying to find a nap, to be honest with you.
So my first question is the vocation. How did you have that vocation to priesthood? How did that come about in your life?
Yeah, my girlfriend broke up with me, so I kind of had nothing else to do. I'm kidding. I broke up with her. Just let you know, I broke up with her. We both were kind of trying to find out what God's plan was for us. You know, even at a young age, I wasn't always a good Catholic. But when I experienced a conversion, I started to take intentionality a little bit more seriously. Like, what is God's intention for me? And it's obviously to become a saint. It's obviously to get to heaven. But between now and then, how can I use my skill sets best to serve the church? And over a period of years of discernment, I finally realized that I look good in black. So this is why I chose this.
You know, it's funny because you're feeding the people, right? And you are both physically feeding people, but also, you know, by your sermons, and that's important. And so us as parents, we are home feeding, I'm feeding my children constantly. And I think that's what I want to touch first is the family is, you know, I want to talk about the importance of literally sitting. I mean, it's such a basic concept. Sit down together and eat. And I think that society has lost it. Tell me what the impact has been.
So the organization that I run is called Plating Grace. And it's chef language for making grace a little bit more plated, well provided, designed, you know? So like you get eat with your eyes first. And one of the things that I've noticed about grace is that it's not just like a word, but it's actually an action. And what does that action of grace do? It brings us together. And then I just kept thinking in my own mind, what's the one thing that brings us all together? And the answer is food. And so my whole organization was really geared towards elevating culture and family life one meal at a time to make sure that the families are coming back around the dinner table. And so when I wrote my first book, it was to really just get feast days to have, whether it be religious feast days or secular feast days, can we at least make an intentional opportunity to come together and make sure it's a good event by having really good food. If the food stinks, no one's going to enjoy it. But if the food is great and there's no one to enjoy it with, it's even worse of an experience. So why can't we have both great food and our families around us? That's what my work is about.
Father Leo, the chef before you became a priest, or how did that go? Were you breakdancing before you became a priest?
Yeah. So the quick answer is yes, I was a breakdancer and a martial artist before I became a priest, but I was always cooking too. So I worked in some restaurants and some fast food stands and things like that. Since I'm my mom's favorite child, she always had me in the kitchen. And so we were always cooking together. Being Filipino, I think hospitality is what we do. I mean, even if we're poor, we just like want to give people a good time. And San Miguel, which is the name of our beer, he intercedes for us. So we always have abundance of that. So it's always a good time in a Filipino's home. And so I always had a lot of culinary experience. And when I experienced a vocation, the priesthood, just kind of symbiotically, it came together that my job was to feed people. So the quote for my holy card on my ordination date, which was June 5th, 1999, yes, I'm that old, but on that ordination date, the quote that I had on the back of my prayer card was, John 21, do you love me? And that was Jesus's question to Peter. And this is all before the TV show and before me beating Bobby Flay, I'm just saying. But before all of that, the question that I felt in my prayer was God asking me, do you love me? And my answer is yes. And Jesus's answer to Peter was, then feed my sheep. So that's what I'm doing.
Father Leo, can you talk about your family life before you became the priesthood, your relationship with your parents and how that affected you? And it seems like a lot of the things that you did growing up, being in the kitchen, being the favorite child, and how that led into you with your vocation and your and in your faith also.
Yeah, so that is very important to know that I am my parents' favorite child. Right? I am the youngest of five, but only four of us living, but I always count that one that was conceived and never made it to full term, right? Mm-hmm. So I, my family is a pretty traditional, faithful Filipino family, even though none of the kids really knew what church was about. We just didn't care. We just didn't want to piss mom and dad off. So we mm-hmm. went every mm-hmm. Sunday. And there was always a little treat at the very end of that. It was, we'd go to the farmer's market. We'd get this roasted chicken, which was unbelievably delicious. And it came with this really special gravy. And so, I mean, Sundays for me was the Eucharist and Jesus and chicken, all right? I mean, so those two things kind of played. And if I was good, I always got some cotton candy as well. So Sundays were always truly a day of family and for us to be together. But interestingly enough, so was Monday through Saturday. I mean, so we always ate together as a family. My dad worked very late at night because he's a physician. And we would wait until he'd come home and eat. So that would be like sometimes 7 or 8 o'clock at night. And that wasn't a big deal for us to wait because it was just time for us to eat together. And so eating together as a family, praying and growing in faith together as a family and having fun. I mean, like we had a lot of fun growing up as kids, even though we were poor. And you might think your dad's a doctor, how's that possible? He did a lot of charity work. He did a lot of pro bono work. Like even now, even though he's retired, he would do missions in the Philippines. So it wasn't about money. It was about spending time with the family. And it's so interesting because I used to get jealous of my other friends who were, you know, rich doctors' kids. And I'm like, wait a minute, why do they live in that part of town? And we live here. And why do they have that? And I got nothing. And but now I can just say that I am so blessed to have had the experiences of mom and dad who were disciplinarians, mm-hmm. but they also had some fun. And the other thing too, is that I am their favorite child in case anyone didn't get that.
So you're being the favorite child. What did they say when you said, I want to become a priest? That's my vocation. Were they?
Yeah. They were like, what the faith? They had no idea. No, I mean, my mom and dad are just very faithful people. And so they knew that I was probably the most questioning in my faith because I wanted to be a lawyer. I wanted to be a journalist. I was going to do political law journalism kind of thing. You know, I mean,
That's soul sucking. You want to go on that road, a lawyer or a journalist? That's like the top two professions that you shouldn't pick.
Wow. I know. My mother said you would be good at both, but you would lose your soul. That's what she said. So I'm using hopefully these skill sets to kind of grow the real message and to practice God's law above all things. But when I first kind of came to my senses that God is real, my mom and dad started to see a little bit of a change in me. I started going to church on my own, even during the weekday. I started kind of defending the faith to other friends who were like, dude, why are you going to church? Why Catholic? You guys are like going to go to hell. And so I would always kind of defending the Catholic faith, or not defending it, because that can lead to defensiveness. Mm-hmm. So we call that apologetics. And people think, so the word apologetics from the two, you know, Greek words is apologos, apo meaning to reveal, logos means the word or the logic. So I would be kind of explaining the logic to people who questioned my faith. And then eventually I got more involved in teaching. I was leading the music group and doing the youth ministry. And then I'm like, my God, I'm already volunteering for these things. You know, maybe I should just get an outfit or a uniform. And so eventually here you have it, the uniform.
I love that you mentioned, because in general, you know, I talked to my husband, he had a super Italian family. We had an Irish family, but my mom always worked at either an Italian or a French restaurant. So she picked up all of that how to cook. So we had a good upbringing when it came to good tasting food. But even when we think about our childhood, we do tend to think about food. We tend to think about our holidays that we spent with the family and that surrounding the table and being present with everyone. And I think that's important because nowadays everyone's rushing to get the sports in, to get, you know, I want my kid to experience life and to experience all these things. And we're taking something so good and breaking it down and saying, well, other things are more important. So what advice do you have for the parents out there that are not really making decisions based off of their values, their family values?
Great question.
I'd say buy my books.
That's right.
Well, let me explain. And the reason why I say it is because, I mean, I'm not here. It's not the Home Shopping Network. I get it. But I want to explain it by answer, by the way that I became an author, even though I'm a terrible writer, but somehow God gave me the ability to write these four books. The first book was about feast days, as I kind of explained, you know, intentionally, you know, we're coming upon, whenever you watch this, we're coming upon a holiday weekend. Can we come together? Yes. And so that's great when we have intentional opportunities throughout the year. But it's really going to happen when mom and dad start taking this seriously. So the second book I wrote was called Spicing Up Married Life. So families can come together regularly. But what about mom and dad? They have to show their kids that marriage is not easy. And therefore, they have to go on dinner dates, which I call month-iversaries. Forget the anniversaries. Why wait that long to celebrate your love? Exactly. Monthly dinner dates. If your kids see mom and dad are taking this intentionally, then I need to learn in the back of my mind that spending time with people I love matters. The third book that I wrote was almost like a theology, an explanation book on why I care about food so much. It's called A Theology of Food. And the book's title is Epic Food Fight. Because God and the devil are in a battle, good and evil are in a battle. And the way that they are going to win us over is food. And the devil gives us really good food that it's bad for us. It looks amazing, but it's just bad for us. And God gives us the bitter herbs of truth, which might not always taste good unless you use a vinaigrette. And I've got a great recipe for that. But the bitter herbs of truth don't always look appealing. So what we've got to do is develop a higher desire for God's feeding us. And so after I wrote that book, people kept asking me that very question, Julia, like, how do we make this happen? So I wrote the fourth book, which is called Saving the Family. And it goes literally through a generation of a family. So like when you're feeding them mashed peas and when they're toddlers, you have to feed them. They will always be there at the table because if not, they will die, right? So you've got to feed them. But when they turn into teenagers, how do you eat together? And when they start like becoming young adults, how do you eat together? And then when you are feeding them mashed peas, will they eventually come back and feed you mashed peas when you need to be fed by them? And so what I try to do is give pastoral advice throughout their life of a family's experience in a generation. And so when people ask me for that advice, I say, read the books because I wrote it for families particularly.
So this is not the Home Shopping Network, but on Father Leo's website, which he's going to give to you in about 10 seconds, you can buy sauces, you can sign up for events, you can buy the books. He's got, I think, monthly programs going on as well. I mean, there's a smorgasbord. Can you give out the website right now before I ask my next question?
Yeah, platinggrace.com, not planting. I suck at gardening. Plating. I can make food look good. That's what plating is. And platinggrace.com.
Don't worry, I'm Italian. I can grow the tomatoes for you. You can cook the tomatoes. So that's great. We're talking about food and abundance. And there's so much that we have in this country. I know in one of your books, you talk about sacrifice. Can we talk when we discuss sacrifice? Because now we're talking about having a great time, enjoying a great meal, cotton candy, roasted chicken. But what about the sacrifice that we need to make?
Someone has to make that food? Is that what you're going through?
just a sacrifice, because sometimes we take it for granted. We don't show the gratitude that we have that. And also on feast days, sometimes it's time to fast.
Well, I wanted to go, and you can answer this question, but I kind of wanted to go the sacrifice. When you said that, I thought mom's in the kitchen cooking most of the time.
What about dad's out there making the bucks, huh? Dad's got to make the bucks for you to be in the kitchen, right?
Yeah, so he's got to bring home the bacon. She fries up in the pan, and don't ever forget, you know, we know that commercial. I just dated myself. If anyone knows that reference, but sacrifice is incredibly powerful when it comes to food. In fact, this came about, and I recall how this idea of God and food started with me. I was asked to go on a retreat. We are quiet. We don't talk. Imagine that, right? I get paid to talk. And so, but in that quiet, while we were eating, the retreat director had us meditate on the colors of the food and what does it strike in our memories, the smells, what does it evoke, the taste. And then we had to think, and it was a very powerful moment of unity because it connected me to the farmers that planted it, the butchers that, you know, provided it for me, the delivery truck people, the chefs who use their hands. I mean, their hands are on food that is now in my mouth. It's incredibly intimate. And in every stage of that, there is a sacrifice, even for the animal to be sacrificed. And so it creates in us an understanding that sacrifice, sacra facere, literally means to make holy. To make holy. And so eating can make you holy depending on what you eat. When you feed someone, you are making others holy by what you are serving them. If all you're giving them is grief and bitterness and just sour, you're not giving them holiness, because there also has to be a little sweetness and consolation. That's why that vinaigrette is so good.
I love that, Father. That was beautiful, because the sacrifice part of it, like, you know, as the mom, you know, I talk to many mothers and they're exhausted and they're tired and like they try to do the meal preps and all this, this cutting. And I said, listen, I understand. And I was there and I get it, this lack of sleep and all that fun stuff. But at the end of the day, when I look back, and even now, you know, our youngest is only 7. So it's not, you know, but it's that work that my son would come downstairs before he got to the downstairs. He knew what I was making by the smell that would, you know what I mean? There's not just putting food on the table. There's something behind it. Like you were saying, the cutting of the vegetables, the smells that are coming out, this whole experience of cooking.
The work ethic. The work that you show your children.
Yes.
That's beautiful.
And so then, like you said, are our kids going to feed us? Well, yes, they are. I have to say, we have little chefs in the house.
That's the goal. I have long-term care. 1 out of 6. I got to get 1 out of those 6 to take care of me. The odds are in my favor, and I do have a favorite, and I'm not going to tell you which one it is.
And that's exactly it. You know, you talk about how exhausting it is to work, mm-hmm. to build a family. And that word work in Greek is letargos. And that's the same word that we use for when we go to church. We celebrate a letargos. We celebrate a liturgy. It literally means work. So if you're not working to serve other people, then you are expecting them to work to serve you. And the only way your kids are going to learn how to be true servants in the future is if they actually see it and model it from what they get from mom and dad. So serving one another begins at home. Mm-hmm. And if you are truly doing your job well, you are, as you know, you're saying, Gino, bringing your kids in so that they learn how to cook, because that's what my mom and dad did with us. I mean, one of us a night was in the kitchen with her, mm-hmm. learning how to cook this, that, and the other, so that we knew that this world did not evolve around me. And that's kind of why I sell aprons, ladies and gentlemen, aprons. And they're black and slimming. And the reason why I do it is because I tell people, if you don't have an apron for everyone in your family, they're going to think they are there to be served rather than there to serve. So I don't care what kind of apron you have, even though mine are really awesome. The idea is, please teach people how to serve. Because if you don't, then they won't. And if we constantly push the service onto other people, they're going to think that service is something that you just pay somebody to do rather than are called to do it.
I'd like to share the story that we've been doing with our family since 2007. Big benefactors of the Franciscan Friars of the Renewal. Every year since 2007, we would go down to the friary in St. Joseph's on Thanksgiving, and we'd cook for the 150 people in the neighborhood. And for us, it wasn't just service, but it was our children seeing us that we're serving the poor, serving those that are not in need. But those people also didn't have families, and that was their family. That was their family day. So what Father Leo is saying is truly important. It's modeling, and let your children see that they may not understand the situation that these that are in less in need have, because they're not in that situation. But if they at least see it, and they see mom and dad serving others, and it's not always just about giving money and donating money, donate your time as well as your treasure. So I think that's truly important. Father Leo, one of my skill sets is I'm really good at stealing my wife's questions. So I'm going to ask you this question, because it's a burning desire of mine. So
he always reads my notes.
Her notes are great. I got like 2 little lines, and she's got like 6 pages over here. I can't even fit them on the desk, but that's okay.
The answer is yes, I am my mom and dad's favorite child. Just in case.
In this, I guess, climate that we're in, we cannot sit down, and the word logos, like you said, logic does not rue the day anymore. It's all about emotions. How can Gino and Father Leo have a conversation yet disagree? And for me, it's not a debate, because I think a debate, like one of my philosopher friends told me, when we have a debate, somebody wins and somebody loses. Let's have a discussion. And the person who has the better ideas or makes more sense, maybe we'll adopt the other ones. But how do you get people around the dinner table or the table and have a frank conversation without insulting each other and without being insulted, and just be open-minded about the other person's ideas?
Well, it really does require people to be mature enough to handle each other's different opinions. And so again, one of my big desires is to have the next set of presidential candidates sit together and eat together. Oh, wait, we already have that. It's called the Al Smith dinner, and he was a Catholic. Interestingly enough, he knew that if we could actually get people to sit together and just talk and listen to each other, we might have things more in common. And those things that we don't have in common, we can serve an opportunity for either discussion or, and I am not afraid to do this, or a debate, a friendly debate where we literally just present the facts. See, oftentimes when people get so heated is because they have such strongly held opinions, but they have no facts to actually back it up. They're literally just being fed a bunch of lies, and just like gullible sheeple, they just basically regurgitate what they have been fed. And so I don't think there's any wrong in being able to have serious, frank discussions, but the frank discussions always have to lead towards one thing, and that is accepting each other for who they are and what their opinions are. A debate has a different conclusion, and it's not necessarily about winning or losing, but which is more factual and therefore logical. But at dinner, all we're doing is just catching up, talking about things that inform us of each other's days and encourage each other. So that I write in the book, Saving the Family, dinner is not a place for all of these debates. It's a place for all of us to just show each other in nonverbal communication that I love you enough that I want to spend time with you. And if there's a difficult topic, hey, let's have a conversation over coffee or dessert, or let's just take a walk after dinner. You see, that dinner time communicates so much love and comfort and responsibility that after the dinner, you can maybe get into it a little bit more.
I love that you said that. I never thought about that. And I always was bothered that a lot of people, you know, in the family, and we hear about it all the time now, no one talks anymore. Nobody goes over each other's house anymore because we disagree. And it's so common right now. It's really weighs on me, you know, but I love that you said that. Have a meal. Enjoy each other. You know them. You know, we're family, we're friends. We know them so well. Get to know them even more and later have that discussion.
Yeah. So that's true for everybody. I wish that there could be opportunities where people who would vehemently disagree with me could actually have a meal with me. Oh, wait, I had that with my podcast. And so my podcast, which I'm not doing anymore because I want to start a new one, it was called Shoot the Shiitake with Father Leo. And I would just have people who might completely disagree with me. We would have a meal. And we would just kind of be pleasant to each other. And then we would have a discussion. Again, and the discussion wasn't to win or to lose, but just to understand each other, where they're coming from. And then if we felt the need to have a little debate about something, then we would literally pick a couple topics, make sure that we have our research, and then we come back and we discuss the debate topics based on what is actually factual and what's logical and what's ultimately going to be helpful. And then in a debate, again, while there could be clearly a winner, our job is not to do that. Our job is to seek the truth. That's what the debate is about.
But that's the problem nowadays. The truth is my truth, the possessive pronoun. There, it's subjective, it seems as if now. There is only one truth, and that's the problem that people struggle with nowadays. And that's, I think, the problem that you know, that we come up against, and it's ideology. And that's something that we have to teach our children, that, you know, 1 + 1 = 2. That's the truth. It's not whatever you want it to feel like. It's not my truth. It's the truth.
So in that regard, I mean, unfortunately, there are a lot of delusional people, and it's actually gotten much worse in light of COVID, because people were just literally sitting and doing nothing but just eating and receiving and being fed a ton of lies, generally from the media. And it's somehow popularized by pop culture and celebrity status folks who really are not always that intelligent, but they don't want to lose their popularity. And so in this regard, I would always challenge people who say that this is my truth. Then I say, then if your truth is your truth, then your judgment of me doesn't matter at all, nor do your moral standards matter. I can have the exact same thing. So what we've got to do is come to an agreement that there is something actually baseline, factual, and objective. But that's not my truth, Dad. And then I say, well, then your version of truth has to have its own consequences and repercussions. Let's see how that plays out. And you'll wind up realizing that that will literally cancel themselves. So for example, the cancel culture, which uses that subjectivity, they are literally canceling themselves as we speak, as we speak. And I'm so grateful to know that there are a lot of clear, logical people who would describe themselves as gay or lesbian. They hate what's going on in the LGBTQ community. Because I mean, like, look, the more letters that they have and the more colors they put on their flag, you can see that they are still evolving and trying to figure out what they stand for. Thankfully, that there are some people who happen to have that sexual inclination, they're much more logical about it. In fact, I was talking to one who is much older and he says, man, these new gays, I have no idea what they're all about. I mean, back in the day, I just didn't want to get beat up. And so you can see how, you know, it really does take a discussion. And that discussion can be so much more easily received if it is preceded by a meal, served with love. I think that was Jesus's model. Yeah. No, I know it was his model.
The truth, is it subjective or objective? Father Leo is the favorite child. We don't know that for sure. That's his truth. Not really sure. I'll take it at his word, though. I don't think he'd lie to me.
If I've got this on, it is definitely that. However, however, as soon as those grandkids came, I was kicked off the list. Totally kicked off that list.
That's awesome. I want to kind of go back there because this moment is really difficult for us. And I've heard some of your
shiitake.
I heard that podcast and I was so impressed by your calmness because a lot of people have a hard time talking to people that they don't agree with because they get so emotional and they get so frustrated. And even myself during COVID, I have had a really huge, it was really difficult for me because there's certain things that I saw so obvious and other people didn't see it. And it was very frustrating.
I got to jump in here real quick. I think it has a lot to do with someone's ego and self-esteem. If you have a really high self-esteem and you're not worried about being right all the time, you can be open to suggestion. There may be somebody who's better than you, smarter than you, has better ideas than you. As far as ego and self-esteem, that has a lot to do with that. So what was your question, Julia, as far as...
Well, that's what it was. It was, how do you advise other people? Because I know you get a lot of, you know, being a priest, a lot of people come to you and ask you advice and counsel on how do I deal with, especially family, when the conversation gets so heated and the emotions are just so strong these days, you know?
Well, first of all, I am no expert at this. I'm no expert at this because... there are times when I would want to have a shouting match with people. I do it in my car by myself with people driving by all the time. All right, all the time. And even with my family, I mean, if we're having some heated debate about the silliest thing about, you know, when is the good time for the family going on vacation? And I'm like, so I can definitely be human and fall to, you know, not taking my own advice. But that's the key, is that we all have to remember we're human. That word human is rooted in the word humus, which means dirt. It's also the same root word as humble. If we can all learn how to be humble, maybe the Bible will make more sense that, you know, that fear of God, which is the type of humility, is the first stage of wisdom. We all have to realize we all don't know anything. So the more humble we seek intentionally to be, the better we're going to be at communicating. Secondly, there's something that we just love in the Catholic Church. We call it confession. If you screw up and you get into an argument, just say the words, I'm sorry. And that is it. You know, I work with ex-cons on my food truck, which is a mission and a ministry. I bring them on, try to give them information. And every time I try to offer them correction, they get so defensive. And to the point where I just say, just say, I'm sorry. You messed up. Don't give me an excuse. Just say you messed up. Life will go on. You don't say, I'm sorry. I can't forgive you. That's just all there is to it. So humility, learning how to say I'm sorry, and then also making sure we have at least a couple different laughs. We gotta be able to tell jokes with each other. That's why I always end with stupid things when I say something like, I'm my mom and dad's favorite kid. You know, I mean, it just kind of gets us to, you know, Jesus says it, be salt of the earth, light of the world, you know, be leaven in society. And that word leaven is rooted in levity. Not every topic is the end of the world. Not every topic is the end of the world. So let's not make it that, you know, let's bring a little bit of levity to it.
Well, that's definitely the key to a good marriage is a sense of humor. That's what I always tell people.
That's why we have the podcast. So Father Leo, we could speak to you for hours. I mean, it's been really an enjoyable conversation. I don't think the listeners got your website. I don't think they know you sell anything. I don't think they know any of your shows or podcasts or events. Can you just mention your website again?
Okay. I always tell people that I'm not pushing a product. I'm giving resources. And if they help, great. And you can get all of those resources. Watch the show. Listen to the podcast. Come with me on a trip, a food and faith trip. It's all at platinggrace.com.
So I usually like to wrap up these shows, and I've got a lot of material here. So Father Leo is one of five kids, four who are still here, one who is in heaven. On Sundays, they were filled with cotton candy and roasted chicken. So I could see a little bit of diabetes in your future. So I'm praying for you on that front. He was the favorite child, as if the 15th time he said that we want to make sure we throw in there, but not anymore. That's over with. He got dumped by his girlfriend, just to put that out there. And then he said, you know what? I need another gig here. Okay.
No, you weren't dumped listening. Her. I dumped her.
All okay. Right.
And you're owning that. I love okay. It.
He went into his vocation. His mom was really thrilled. His father was a physician and is doing God's work and is really working others. And I think that's where Father Leo got his cues and his message and his role models in life. Mm-hmm. And I think the role model and the message that we want to portray in this show and with Father Leo is we want families to come around the dinner table. We want parents to lead. We need leaders. We need moms and dads to be strong to teach their children how to serve and how to serve others and how to lead an impactful life. Any final words, Father Leo?
No, I think you just about got it. Thank you for the invitation to be part of your show. It's been fun.
Thanks, Father Leo. Julia?
No, it was beautiful. I just want to thank you for being out there because it does take courage to be out there and speaking the truth.
Starting a podcast with your wife takes a lot of courage, my friend, you know? So thanks again. We appreciate it.
God bless you all.
Thank you.
The most innovative companies are going further with T-Mobile for Business. Tractor Supply trusts 5G solutions from T-Mobile. Together, we're connecting over 2,200 stores with 5G business internet, empowering AI so team members can match shoppers with the products they need faster. This is enriching customer experience. This is Tractor Supply with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.